Dostoevsky, Wannabe Cities, Birmingham, edited by C.D. Rose. Episode 7. Raven by Gary Fletcher. Hi, I am Gary Fletcher, and I write stuff, and sometimes people publish it, which is absolutely wonderful. I've had stuff published in Unfank Books, Blackheath Books, 3AM Magazine, blah blah blah. And I've got a couple of books out with Mantle Lane Press, which is absolutely brilliant. I've got one called Night Swimming and another one called Submerged. And now I have a story in this absolutely incredible anthology, edited by Chris Rose, which I'm really, really chuffed about. So, Birmingham and me. Well, what do you want to know? I moved here in late 93. It was bleeding cold, and I lived in a grotty room in Perry Bar. Now, Perry Bar in the early 90s wasn't a very nice place to live. Apologies for people that love Perry Bar, but it was a real dump, and it was a real baptism by ice, because, as I said before, it was freezing. But I moved here. I decided to come here, see what it's like, really, and ended up staying, ended up falling in love with the place. And it's now, 2020, 26-odd years later, and I still love living here. It's a big place, not as big as London, I think I've mentioned in other podcasts, but it's a big enough place to get lost in, and there are so many wonderful stories within this sprawling beast we call Birmingham, and so many wonderful writers as well, as we're discovering through these podcasts that I've put together. So it's an incredibly wonderful place to live and to write. I'm trying to think, my earliest memories of Birmingham would have been as a young man, as a teenager, well, maybe even younger than that, I might have been 12 or something like that. And I was obsessed with comics. I still like comics now a great deal, but I was absolutely obsessed then. And there was a comic convention in Birmingham, and I had no idea what that meant. What it meant was lots of people much older than me sat around tables with big boxes full of comics, selling them, which was absolutely incredible. But it was down Corporation Street. So I remember arriving at Digbeth Coach Station, which wasn't as lovely as it looks now. It was a corrugated, rusting heap, and walking through where the old markets were, around the Bull Ring, and down Corporation Street. And it was in the Q Club, right down the bottom of Corporation Street. And that was my first kind of taste of Birmingham. And I remember there were these subways that aren't there now. Because in the 50s and 60s, we were all going to live underground. And there were these roundabouts. And under there was all these walkways. And there were shops and newsagents and cafes underground. And for me, as a young man who read 2000 AD and was fascinated by Carlo Escrivá's visions of Megacity One, this was quite exciting, you know, a cafe underground, news agents underground. This was the future. They were horrible. But as a young lad, I was totally enthralled by them. I don't know why I'm telling you about this, because it has nothing to do with the story that I've written whatsoever. So I will try and get back on track. But that was my first taste of Birmingham. And then occasionally I'd come up and see bands and stuff like that, and sometimes do a bit of shopping. But yeah, I moved here by mistake and ended up staying, and I'm really, really glad that I did. I just realised I didn't say where I moved from. Not too far away. I moved from a shitty little town called Northampton, which is about 60 miles away, but so much smaller than Birmingham. So yeah, nice change for me there. So what about Raven then? Raven is my contribution to the Birmingham anthology, and it's I feel it fits in very, very nicely with the other stuff that's in there. There's a really good mix. But how did Raven come about? Well, it came about somebody. I was asked to write a story, and this was before before Chris asked for a contribution to the anthology. This was a few years back, and it was the Birmingham Literature Festival. And there were some lovely people that worked for Writing West Midlands, worked in the office. They're not there anymore, but they thought, oh, it'd be nice if we got a comic strip as part of the festival. So I was commissioned, and an incredible illustrator called Anya Young, we were both commissioned to come up with a comic strip. And the idea was to create this comic strip over the 7 to 10 days of the festival. So it was a lovely idea, totally impractical, because to knock a comic strip out in 10 days from nothing to a finished piece, is not impossible, but it would have been, 15-hour shifts every day, and that just wasn't going to happen. So me and Anya got together before, and was very, very open as to what kind of story we'd do. So we just got chatting about things that we had in common. We both had a love of Neil Gaiman, and decided that we were going to create something off kilter, kind of gothic, but modern. So something that was very, very familiar, but there was something wrong with it. And that's where Raven came from. It came from a conversation with me and Anya. So I needed to produce a script for the comic book. But for me to get it all sort of straight in my head, I wrote a short story. So I wrote a short story which was similar to the one that's in the Birmingham anthology. But there are differences there. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. So I wrote that so I could get it in my head. And then I wrote the script for Anya. And we collaborated over the week. And I adapted some of the dialogue and some of the text box descriptions that went along with it. And she produced this incredibly, I'm saying incredible a lot, haven't I? But it was this amazing, amazingly drawn comic book that's about 6 pages long. So it is really, really short. And it's still out there somewhere in the interverse, floating around. No, seriously, it's out there. If you want to find it, then check out my blog. I'll give you the address of that near the end, and there's a link from my blog to it. So that's where it came from. So like some of the other writers have said, Chris approached us for ideas, for stories, and I submitted two stories to Chris. One was kind of very typical of what I write. It was a very kind of concrete realism about an elderly couple living in a tower block. And the other one was Raven, because he said he wanted something weird. And it is weird, but I like it a lot, and I'm really pleased that it's now found a home. So that's the one that Chris liked, and it was a real pleasure working with Chris, because you need a good editor that can turn around and say things like, I hate trains in stories, or your story starts here, which is like a page and a half after where you started it. And he was right. He was dead right. But that's, for somebody to turn around and say, I hate trains in stories, when your story starts with somebody on a train reflecting about the fact that they have to go back to their hometown and they don't particularly want to, is like, you need that clarity. You need that vision from somebody who outside of the story to say, yeah, this is just padding. Get rid of that. And he was right. And the story starts now exactly where it should start. And it's a much better story for it. So hats off. I'm not wearing a hat now, but I just mimed taking a hat off. That's my problem, not yours. So yeah, hats off to Chris, because he was a damn good editor. And I'm going to carry on talking. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you an extract from my short story, Raven. Raven. Going home was never an option, until it was the only option she had left. Kingsheath Park wasn't far from the solicitors. It had changed in the 20 years since Esther had left. The pond had been dredged, cleaned and replanted. New paths had been put in, the borders thick with greenery and bark chippings. She walked past it quickly. The tea room's intricate lattice work of iron and glass that made up the Edwardian conservatory had gone, and in its place stood a brazen block of steel and glass. She sat at a bench overlooking the bowling green. Days and weeks had been lost here, flicked away as carelessly as breadcrumbs for the ducks, the time unimportant. Esther let out a sigh, leaned back and looked up. The rain had stopped. A vivid blue could be glimpsed behind delicate wisps of cloud. She looked for faces, for shapes within them. These had come easily in her teens. Esther slowly made out the form of a young girl in a dress clutching a balloon. She closed her eyes. A flap of wind, then another. She felt the sky darken, the temperature drop, and the low croak of a bird. When she'd first met Nick, the park was all they had. They'd patrol it arm in arm, snatching intimacy behind bushes or wrapped up against each other on a bench. Eventually, they had their own home, but it was never the same. Something brushed her face, a flicker of darkness and then the smell of freshly dug earth. She raised her hand in protection and looked around. A bird took to the sky. She watched it curve above her and saw it joined by another, then another. The rich tang of soil grew stronger and was accompanied by a frantic clawing. Just to the side of the bench, the turf flinched. A small flap of grass gave way to a raven, its wings flicking water from the short lawn, its eyes frantic for escape. Years before, when her father was the world and he'd drive them south towards Bromsgrove, she'd be full of words and pointing, stomping along the towpaths while he patiently answered her questions. One day, she asked him about a lonely crow waiting for its friend, and he corrected her. "That's not a crow, sweetness. It's a raven, a very powerful bird." He asked her to listen to its long, deep croak and look at its beak. "Much bigger than a crow's," he said. It wasn't long after this that he left. "Taken by the crows," Mother said, but Esther knew it was the ravens. She pulled her feet up onto the bench. The bird pulled itself into the sky and was followed by another and another until the whole green was ruptured with black darts. Esther threw her hands over her head. The birds all around her. The sky was thick with them and the sun banished. She dropped to the floor and rolled under the bench. "Help!" A scream cut through everything. "Are you all right, miss?" A young boy looked down at her with big eyes as he clutched a football. She peered out from beneath the wooden slats of the bench. There were no birds. She walked briskly through the park, head down, shoulders forward. Ravens travel in pairs, not gangs like crows. She headed across Avenue Road and then up Vicarage, heading back towards the High Street. The houses here were tall and imposing, a collection of mock Tudor and Victorian with many additions through the ages, so that some of them looked like they'd tried to twist out of their own skin, brickwork cracked and render broken. A friend had lived along here. She was livelier than Esther, all confidence and curls, and whilst her face was still framed in her memory, her name was lost. The past was not a place she chose to visit. The friend had been pushy, going out of her way to sit with Esther, playing with her hair and insisting that Esther come to her house for tea. The friend's house was uncomfortable. She had a mother and father who spoke in words, not stares, and a younger brother who smelt of nappies and warm milk. Friend with no name followed her to secondary school and college and introduced her to Nick. Esther had tried blaming her, but in the end it was better to move away and forget. The solicitors, an old house with Tudor pretensions, sat on the corner overlooking the church and the new square. A bite out of the churchyard had left paving and benches. Esther approved. She could see herself sitting there, watching the world go by. She stopped and checked herself. When had she last just sat anywhere and watched the world go by? The image of ravens breaking over her head came back, and she shuddered. Dad seen in them. The journey from London had been long and uncomfortable. It had taken a toll on her. The sign outside said Belladonna, Hughes and Koch. This was in gold upon a purple background, the gold leaf flaking away in patches and the purple faded somewhat against the sun's glare. Esther pressed the battered intercom. Yes, a female voice out the speaker, dislocated and uninterested. I'm here to see Mr. Koch. He's expecting me. Is he? Is he really? And you are? Esther. Esther Hart. Oh, yes. There was a sharp buzz and the snap of a lock released. Come up. There was a musty smell throughout the building, like it had recently been opened up after a long time vacant. The entrance led straight onto a set of stairs, bare wood, once painted white. There were flecks of something dried, off-white and light grey, splashed on the wooden handrail. Possibly paint, probably not. Esther's hand hovered above the rail. She looked up. Silent and still, but for their flickering black eyes, sat two dark birds side by side, looking down at her from a picture rail way up near the ceiling. She stared, unable to move. A dull thud came from upstairs. Esther turned to look where the sound had come from, and when she looked back at the birds, they were gone. A solitary feather swirled lazily towards her and landed on the back of her hand. It was deep jet. She picked it up and twirled it around, revealing petrol-like colours across the veins of the feathers. She carried on up the stairs and came to a room with a desk, a bare and simple space, no ornamentation other than a large gilt-framed painting of three men. A woman glared at her from behind the desk. Miss Hart, the voice from the intercom, a cold, uncaring rasp that should have belonged to a much older person. The one in front of Esther couldn't have been much more than 20. Esther stared at her. Miss Hart. Yes, sorry, I wasn't expecting. She drifted off and found herself looking at the painting. It reminded her of something she'd seen years ago, before she left Birmingham, before she met him. She'd been at the Barber Institute on a school trip and found herself drawn to it. A large gold frame, a bedridden man, holding his hand out to two others, and something in the title about a blessing. This had the same feel, the same subdued lighting, the same use of colour, and whilst the man on the right was not bedridden, he was holding his hand out to the other two. He's waiting for you. The secretary dropped a large folder onto her desk, producing another solid thud, and began flicking through it. Sorry? Mr. Koch. She nodded at a dark wooden door on her left. Esther's focus had drifted back to the painting. The receptionist coughed and smiled. It seemed to Esther that she had far too many teeth. He's waiting. Esther stared at the receptionist. She didn't recognise her own actions. Everything associated with Birmingham and King's Heath made her want to crawl inside herself and refuse to come out, and yet she had to be here. She had to go through with this. Esther walked towards the door, cursing Mr. Koch under her breath. The door led to a short, stuffy corridor with only a muted skylight to illuminate it. She thought the glass had been painted over, then realised its opacity was due to the local birds using it for target practice. She stood by the door at the end of the corridor, knocked, and then walked in. There was an absence of light. Blinds covered the large window at the end of the room, allowing narrow strips of pale sun to smudge along the edge of a desk, a filing cabinet, a chair, and an unbelievably healthy rubber plant. The musty smell was even stronger here, and Esther felt a compulsion to pull the blinds up and swing open the window. I'd rather you didn't, a man's voice, dark and sweet. Esther was startled. She felt nauseous, like she'd eaten too much rich food. It's a strain, you see, on the eyes. I found the dark helps me to concentrate. Esther regained her composure, took a deep breath. Bit difficult to read, though. True, but then I wasn't reading. Take a seat. Esther stayed where she was, her eyes slowly making out the thin outline of a man sitting at the desk. Well-manicured nails on the tips of long, delicate fingers switched on a small, decorative lamp. Please, I won't bite. Esther pulled the wooden chair out and sat down. Now then, Miss Hart, can I get you a drink? Perhaps a cup of tea. I just want to get this sorted and go back home. What do I need to sign? You have no links to the area. No friends or family to see. No. And yet you grew up here. Look, I just want to get this done. Where are the papers? The papers are fine, Miss Hart. There's just one small problem. We can't sign them here. Okay, and as always, if you would like to find out what happens to Esther, then you're going to have to buy the book, aren't you? So, you know, get those fingers on those keyboards, get yourselves ordering a copy of Dostoevsky, Wannabe Cities, Birmingham, edited by the supremely wonderful Chris Rose, and you can find out where all these stories go, and many more. We've not been able to speak to all of the writers, but we also have stuff from George Bastow, Yasmin Ali, Honor Gavin, Alex Lee Krasner, who else? Just Alan Marr, Maisie Chan, Chris Ackers, and Kashmir Tutt. So if you like what you've heard so far, get out there, get that book. As I said at the beginning, I'm Gary Fletcher. I've put these together and I have thoroughly enjoyed doing so. Who'd have thought talking to yourself in your bedroom could be so much fun? Okay, let's not stay there. So how have I done this? I thought, you know, because at the end, I'm not going to talk about my story because that's just daft, vain, and it's not happening. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about how I've done this. So there's lots of ways you can do this, but I've done this in GarageBand. So if you have an Apple product, might be a bit tricky on a phone, you get back GarageBand for free and you can record tracks upon it. So you can use the inbuilt microphone on your hardware and away you go. And it's as easy as that. If you don't have an Apple machine, there's lots of other software out there. I believe you could probably do something similar to this in Audacity. But just have a little Google. There's loads of people out there love telling you how to do stuff, and it is quite simple to put together. The music at the beginning and the end, I wrote that and recorded that again in GarageBand. It's just a little bit of fun, but I think it works quite well for this. And then it's all hosted, as you'll know from following the links, on Podbean, which is a free site. You get so many hours for free, and you know, before you know it, you too could be talking to yourself in your bedroom or your kitchen or your cellar and then flinging it out across the internet for others to enjoy. So that's it, really. Sadly, this is over for me because, as I say, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. But yeah, let me know what you think. So there's quite a few people following these now on Podbean, and I post the links on Twitter and Facebook. So if you have enjoyed it, please let me know. And who knows, I might do something similar to this in the future. So I have been and still am Gary Fletcher. You've been a pleasure, and hopefully we'll speak again soon. Goodbye. Oh, and just before I go, I did mention my blog, which is fletchski.com. So it's fletchski.com, and there'll be some stuff there. Go have a look.